Hello and welcome back to Aliens, UFOs, and Ghost Stories. Today I'm joined by a friend. His name's Sean Hopkins. He's from Ohio, and unfortunately, right now he's battling stage 4 cancer. But he has a lot of absolutely incredible stories, stories that we've not really had on the show before, really. Sean, would you like to say hi?
Hello. How's everyone doing? Yeah, my name's Sean Hopkins, and I'm 40 years old from Dayton, Ohio, and I can't wait to tell you my stories.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on. The first time I've heard it, or the first time I heard you of you was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I was absolutely floored by your experiences. But I'll let you take over, and like I said, yeah, just kind of how did it all begin for you?
Okay, well, pretty much before 2011, when the first incident occurred, I got to tell you that I did not believe in anything. I had an idea that aliens were real or whatnot, but as far as ghosts and demons and all that other stuff, I thought it was all BS. So keep that in mind. But basically how it all started was 2011, it was October. I don't remember the exact date, but I was at a friend's house and she had a Ouija board on top of her refrigerator. So it's just maybe like four of us were there. It wasn't many people, but I seen the Ouija board and I got it down and I said, hey, you know, who wants to play with this? Let's play the Ouija board. Well, no one wanted to mess with that thing, which I guess they were smarter than me. I was a knucklehead and I said, well, I'll just do it by myself. So I got the Ouija board down and I'm just in their living room and I start calling out ghosts and spirits and whatnot, you know, just trying to get communication to the other side, but I didn't expect anything to happen. Now, keep in mind the planchette never moved, so nothing communicated with me on the Ouija board at all. No one said hi or the thing never moved at all. So I didn't think much of it, and I ended up getting bored with it, and I put it back up. Now, apparently you're supposed to say goodbye to the Ouija board. I didn't know that back then, and no one ever said hello to begin with. So why, you know, who am I saying bye to? So I never did that. And I ended up going home that night. And I think it was the next night, if I'm not mistaken. I was working second shift at a place called Convergys in Kentucky. And I got home, you know, roughly around like midnight or so. And I laid down in my bed. I was in my brother's house because I lived in his guest bedroom at the time. So I laid down on my bed and I don't even think 2 minutes went by. I mean, I didn't even have time to turn on the TV yet. You know, no time went by. Like pretty much as soon as I laid down in bed, my whole body just went stiff as a board, completely stiff. I didn't know what was happening. You know, I didn't know if I was having a seizure, which I've never had before, but I didn't know what was going on. My whole body just completely locked up on me. Okay. And right about that time when I'm starting to panic, wondering what's happening to me, this is pretty crazy, but a woman's voice, a woman demon, I suppose, voice started coming out of my mouth. So I could hear her clearly and I could actually feel my mouth moving, but it wasn't me controlling it. And it was a woman yelling out of my mouth. I'm not sure what she said. For $1 million, I couldn't tell you what she said. I don't even know what language it was. But I just remember it was a woman yelling crazily out of my mouth, or out, you know, from me. And right around that time, I realized I'm getting possessed. I pretty much realized it right there. Like, wow, there's another entity inside me. And right around that time, she kicked me out of my body. So I literally left my body and had, I guess, what some would call an OBE, out-of-body experience. And I started floating around the room. And, well, when you're outside of your body, at least for me, and from what I've heard from other stories and stuff like that, it was completely peaceful. I went from panicking, you know, all those human emotions, to just totally peaceful. That's the best way I can describe it. And I'm floating around the room about ceiling height, you know, up there towards the ceiling. I'm just kind of floating and I'm staring at myself. And she's in my body, obviously, because she's still yelling. And I'm watching myself on the bed with a woman's voice coming out of me, twitching and going crazy and screaming whatever she was screaming. And I don't remember like floating back down into my body or anything like that, but it was more like in the blink of an eye, I'm back in my body and I'm fighting for control of my body. It was like an internal struggle for control of my body. And it was very strange. So we're fighting for control of my body, and somehow I kicked her out of my body. She left my body. I could feel when she left. It was a giant relief. And I couldn't stop convulsing. I was kicking my legs. I mean, my body, my muscles were just going crazy. And after about, I'd say a minute or two, I'm not sure, I was able to gain control of my muscles again. And I got up and I walked across the hallway. There was a guest bathroom there. And I went into the bathroom and I looked at myself in the mirror. And all I remember saying is, WTF. And, you know, obviously I said the actual phrase, but I don't want to curse on your podcast, obviously. But yeah, I said WTF, and I looked at myself in the mirror for a minute. And then I went back into the room and felt my bed. My whole bed was soaked in sweat. I mean, it was waterlogged. There was so much sweat. And I felt my arm and I was like, wow, I'm on fire. I mean, I felt like I must have been 110 degrees. I was just overheating. And that's pretty much it for the first story. You know, I messed with that Ouija board and I ended up getting possessed. And, you know, luckily I didn't have to have a priest come out and do an exorcism or anything like that. I mean, it all happened relatively quick. No one else was around me, but I mean, my brother and his wife and his daughter, they were all upstairs in their bedrooms sleeping. So no one heard me or anything like that. But I mean, it was very real, all too real. And that pretty much opened my eyes to the paranormal being all too real, you know?
Yeah. No, I can hear the emotion in your voice, Sean. And it's been that way every time I've heard you tell the story, because you have quite a few experiences. But this one, you know, after doing this for a while, you know, some people it's just, you know, I saw a UFO at a distance and it's almost like gleeful, or, you know, they're happy that they had the experience. But this, I mean, I could tell it shook you up. That had to be terrifying.
Oh, it still terrifies me. I mean, to this day, I get nervous sometimes, you know, when I'm alone in my room, I get nervous thinking, you know, what if this happens again? You know, it's pretty scary. But, you know, my mind wanders also, like, you know, what if this demon would have actually got control of my body for a long period of time and, you know, went and, you know, murdered my brother and his family or something crazy like that. You know, luckily I was able to get her out of my body because it definitely felt malevolent. It wasn't a nice spirit coming to say, hello, how you doing? You know, it felt like pure evil. I mean, just God, pure evil.
I can only imagine. And then just to be clear, like, as far as anything to do with possession, that was a one-off, thankfully. It never happened again.
No, thank God. It's never happened again. And I pray now and I ask God, you know, please keep me away from evil spirits and keep evil spirits away from me, rather. And luckily, no, it has never happened again. Thank God. I have had other paranormal experiences since then, which I'll get into. But no, that's a one-off thing. Thank God.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't even know. I can't even put myself there in that position without, of course, having experienced it myself. But earlier you said OBE or out-of-body experience, and I thought that was interesting because the vast majority of the time that you hear about OBEs is when it has to do with near-death experiences where, you know, someone will be on the brink of death or, you know, nearly dead, and they're kind of floating above their body, kind of watching what's going on. I mean, during that possession, did you think that you could have died? I mean, is that what was going through your head?
Well, it's not that I thought I could have died, but it did let me know, excuse me, drop something. But it did let me know that, you know, life goes on. You know, when I do drop my body, when I do die, obviously I'm going to leave my body and we go on. So it really let me know that there is an afterlife, pretty much. That sealed the deal for me on that. And, you know, I didn't really believe in God or angels or demons or anything prior to that incident, but now I'm a firm believer, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it just let me know basically that there is an afterlife, and our, you know, we, our souls do go on.
Yeah, and there's almost something comforting in that too. Yeah, that's, you know, yeah, I think some of our listeners know that I've had bouts of depression, but that's something I don't know why or how. Well, I guess it's pretty easy to imagine, but listening to near-death experiences and everybody essentially reporting the same exact thing over and over, that it did give them a lot of peace, and that they're really just overwhelmed with like love and happiness. And but yeah, I can only imagine. So what else, or where did it start to turn from there? Because I've heard quite a few of your stories. I'm just curious, chronologically, what happened after that possession attempt?
Okay, so that was in 2011. I didn't have another paranormal experience until 2013. And I ended up moving into my grandmother's house after she passed away. And, you know, I took over and was paying rent to her daughter and my aunt. And I was living in her house. I moved in probably like a month after she passed, so relatively quick. And things started happening around the house. And I didn't really put two and two together that it was my grandmother at first, but we would have small things happen. Like, I'll give you an example. One time, me and my oldest son were sitting in the kitchen, and there's a chandelier that hangs over the table there. And my son is sitting, I'm standing, and we're just talking about whatever. And all of a sudden, the chandelier above my head just starts shaking violently, as if someone's right there shaking it, saying, "Hey, I'm right here," you know. And it just starts shaking above my head. It freaked me and my son out, obviously, because he's clearly seen that I didn't do it. And, you know, it's really high, so it's not like any cat could jump up and hit it or anything. I mean, it's, you know, above my head. I'm 6'2". So it just started violently shaking. And, you know, at that point, I'm thinking, you know, is my house haunted? But I didn't really put two and two together that it was my grandmother. But I'll get to how I figured that out here in a minute. But another time, I was in my bedroom, and we had a lamp next to our bed that's one of those tall stand-up lamps, kind of one of those old-school lamps that you have to turn twice, click, click, in order to turn it on, click, click, in order to turn it off. And it would just come on out of nowhere. It would be 3 in the morning, and all of a sudden I'd hear click, click, you know, as if someone literally turned it. And the light would just come on. And I mean, there's no possible way that that thing could just turn itself like that. I mean, you had to physically grab it and turn it twice in order to get the light to come on. And it would just come on and go off randomly, you know, as I would sleep. So that was pretty freaky in and of itself. But just small things like that would happen, you know. But one day, I was with my ex-girlfriend at the time, and we were laying in bed, and I think we were just like on our phones or something. I don't know. We were just hanging out, and all of a sudden, about the size of a beach ball, I'd say, a little bigger than a basketball, sized orb came floating down the hallway and stopped right in front of my door, right in front of the bedroom door there in the hallway. And I look over it, my ex, and I said, "Are you seeing this?" And she looked back at me like with a horrified face, and she said, "Yes, yes, I'm seeing this." And I got up, I walked towards it, and it's just, I mean, if you can imagine just a glowing ball of energy just floating in midair right there in front of our faces. It definitely is the trippiest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I've heard of orbs, and, you know, you hear people talk about seeing little orbs and big orbs in the sky, and, you know, you always hear about orbs, but I never thought I'd ever see one in person inside my house, right in front of my face like that. And so I get up, and I walk over towards it, and I go to touch it, because I don't know, I was just mesmerized by it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So I go to touch it. And as soon as my finger got right up to it, like, you know, about to touch it, it just completely disappeared. And I didn't see this part, but she claims that right after it disappeared, the blankets got ripped off of her and thrown into our mirror that we had over our dresser. I didn't see that part because I was still staring in the direction of the hallway. So, I mean, I don't see why she would make that up after all the crazy stuff we just seen. So I believe her on that. But it disappeared and never seen it again. So maybe a day or two later, it went into my aunt's house, who lived like three doors down. And that was her daughter, my grandmother's daughter. It went into my aunt's house and she took a picture of it. So I have a picture of it. You know, I should have took a picture of it, but I was just so mesmerized. I didn't even think about that. You know, I was just, my eyes were just glued to that thing. And so I do have a picture you can show your listeners, which is pretty wild looking. And when I went back and I put the picture through a filter, through an Instagram filter, just, you know, just messing around with it, just trying to see it better, I ended up actually seeing my grandmother's face in the orb. My grandmother had a real chubby face with short, dark hair. And if you look closely in the picture, you can actually see the outline of my grandmother's face and mouth and her hair and her, you know, her entire head is like in the orb. So that pretty much let me know, wow, this is my grandmother. You know, she came back to her house and paid me a visit. I don't think she ever left. Wow. And yeah, it was pretty wild.
And, yeah, that's absolutely incredible. Sorry to interject, but the episode art is actually going to be that photo. And if you look hard enough, he's exactly right. And yeah, if anybody's unsure of this phenomena, I've seen multiple videos of that being the case. And it always is of the face. I mean, I guess it wouldn't make sense for it to be anything else, right? But yeah, I've studied that photo quite a bit. Really kind of jaw-dropping, really.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I've never thought I would see anything like that. And I know this all sounds crazy, but, you know, if I'm crazy, then so is my girlfriend at the time because she's seen it too. And so is the camera because the camera's, you know, seen it, and my aunt. So we're all crazy, I guess. But no, it's definitely a real phenomenon, and it happened. And, you know, it was pretty trippy, to say the least. But it's good.
Yeah, trust me, I'm sure you know. I know for a fact that you're not crazy, and we have a bunch of like-minded listeners who know that you're not, you know. So, but I think it's interesting that you said at no point were you thinking, hey, I need to snap a picture, because although I've never seen an actual UFO, like a craft, but I've seen during C5s, I've seen orbs, and I've even seen orbs on my property, smaller ones that were much lower. Never. I was just blown away with what was happening. Never at any point did I even consider grabbing a phone and taking a photo. And even the owl, the one where I telepathically asked it, you know, to sound out, to call out, and it did. Never during that did I say, hey, you know what, I need to record this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, when something that extreme happens, I mean, most people, your first thought isn't, oh, let me grab my phone and record. I mean, you can't even take your eyes off this thing. You know, it's just something that is so mind-blowing that I didn't know how to react. You know, you're not prepared for that. It's not like someone says, hey, man, here in a minute, you know, you're going to see an orb. Have your camera ready. You're ready to take it. It just happens, and you're caught off guard, and that's what happened to me. I mean, it just like the possession thing, that completely caught me off guard, too. I wasn't ready for that at all, you know. And it's pretty much the same thing. But I mean, luckily, I ended up getting a picture through my aunt, which is pretty cool. You know, she ended up taking a picture of her liver. And if you look closely at that picture, you can actually see some type of white mist down at the bottom right hand side. I'm not sure what that's about. But and then you can clearly see the orb in the picture also. And some people will think, oh, this is just something that happened with the camera. You know, it's just, you know, a part of the film or whatever. But no. I mean, we actually, four eyes seen this thing with me. I mean, me and her seen this thing. So, you know, it's definitely real, and it happened, and it was my grandmother. And, you know, me and my grandmother weren't really, like, close or anything like that. But she definitely came back and paid me a visit and let me know, like, hey, this is still my house. You know, she bought that house when it was built a long time ago. And she bought the house for $8,000, if that tells you how long ago it was. when she got the house.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was her house, you know, and she was just letting me know, hey, you're in my bedroom. This is my house. And I'll turn the lights on if I want to. And I'll shake the chandelier if I want to. And I'll, and, you know, the fact that she showed herself to me, or how we were able to see her in the form of an orb, that was pretty wild.
For sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it seems like she definitely wanted to make her presence known. And as far as the mist or fog that you described in some of those photos, some people might call that quantum fog. The first time I heard that was a couple months back. And my friend, he's a Peruvian American guy. He said that during all his C5s and all the research that he's done, that a lot of the times when a true experience is happening, you know, and if you consider the ET or spirits from another dimension, that when they present themselves in ours, that there's often a mist or a fog. So that's fascinating.
It is. Yeah. I mean, the mist isn't in the shape of a person or anything like that. At first, I actually thought it was just the glare from the TV being on in the picture. But then as I got a closer look, I realized it's way below the TV, and there's no way that's the glare from the light from the TV. You know, that's something altogether different. So, yeah, the picture is pretty much proof in the pudding there, you know. But some people still don't believe, you know, but to each their own, you know. But I definitely believe in an afterlife now. I definitely believe in angels and demons now. I believe in God now. You know, I'm a firm believer at this point.
Yeah. So in my scenario, I'm just trying to relate to what you're saying is, I've never heard a spirit, but I've, you know, twice I had one sit on my bed, and that was clearly the spirit of my grandfather. We had multiple people within our family who had the same exact experience, sometimes up to, you know, 12, 15 times, but I've never heard one. And as far as a full body apparition, I've never seen that either. I've just seen, you know, from the knee down one time when one walked past me very quickly. At any point other than the possession, did you ever feel like you heard any noises?
No, nothing. I mean, it just kind of came and went, and thank God it never returned. But I definitely believe that it was from playing with that Ouija board. You know, even though the planchette never moved and no one ever communicated with me from the other side or anything like that, I think that thing followed me home, you know, which is also pretty crazy to think about, too, because at the time I lived in Indiana. I lived in Lawrenceburg, Indiana at the time. And when I played with the Ouija board, that was in Kentucky. So this thing followed me all the way to my house, a good, you know, 45-minute drive or more.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard of just people say living in a haunted house, and they're like, you know, let's just move, and they'll move, you know, from Michigan to California, you know, a preposterous distance apart, and it still continues.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can get away from that type of stuff. A lot of people think, oh, I lived in multiple haunted houses growing up. It's like, no, you were probably followed by something, you know, as opposed to just every house you've been to just happened to be haunted. It's more likely that you were followed by some type of spirit.
Or yeah, that's apparition. A good point. So after 2013, was there anything significant that happened around that time? Other than that, of course.
Not around that time, but, you know, just a few years later after that, I ended up getting cancer, and I was told by the doctors that I had a year to live if I was lucky. And, you know, thank God I've exceeded their expectations and I'm still here. I've been on chemotherapy for over 3 years now, which is a feat in and of itself. You know, I do chemo every other week. And, you know, not to get too personal with my conversations with God, but one of the days I was breaking down, just very emotional over being told that I'm about to die, I had a heart to heart with God. And if you ever go through something like that and you talk to God, it's different than a regular prayer. It's not like, you know, hey, God, bless my family and friends, you know, blah, blah, blah. Amen. It felt like a real connection. Like I was literally talking to God, and I basically asked him, God, I know I haven't lived right. You know, I know I could have been a better person. And I know this is the cards I'm dealt here. I'm going to die. I said, but can you please just let me watch my kids grow up a little more. I'm not ready to go yet. I got to see my kids grow up. They mean too much to me. You know, I have three children. Two are biological. One is from a previous relationship, but she became my daughter. And, you know, they mean everything to me. My kids are my world, you know, and they were back then too. So I just basically begged God, can you please just let me stay alive long enough to watch them grow up a little bit? And so far he has. You know, I wasn't expected to live. I have a very rare cancer. If anybody wants to look it up, it's called PMP. That's the acronym. It stands for pseudomycoma peritonei. It's a really long name. But the acronym is PMP, and it's a very rare cancer. Only about 1,000 people a year get it, I think, out of, 7 billion people in the world. So it's very rare, and it's it's very aggressive. I have very aggressive tumors, and they're spreading, very fast. They've been spreading since, when they caught the cancer, I was already in stage 4 when they caught it. Mm-hmm. So, and that was in 2017. You know, they caught the cancer, and they told me I'm in stage 4. They did multiple surgeries on me. I have a giant scar from my chest all the way down to my pubic region, where they cut me open twice, and they took out pretty much every organ that you can survive without. They took out my pancreas. They took out my gallbladder. They took out my spleen. I'm forgetting one, my appendix. And something else, like a piece of liver or a piece of kidney. I can't remember exactly, but they took out pretty much everything. And now, you know, I have to take pills before I even eat. Even if I ate just a snack, if someone offered me a cookie, I have to stop and say, hang on, you know, and I have to take a pill first and then I can eat. So, you know, it's kind of rough, you know, always having to bring medicine everywhere I go now. But other than that, you know, I try to live a normal life. You know, I take care of my grandfather. He's elderly, and, you know, he's pretty much on his way out now. He's in the hospital as we speak, but he's coming back home tonight, and he has stage 4 kidney disease and COPD and a bunch of other stuff, but he was given the decision today if he wants to do dialysis or if he just wants to pretty much die, and he said he'd rather go. So I've been taking care of him for the past couple years and, you know, just trying to live as normal as possible for, you know, my circumstances. But as far as paranormal goes, no, I haven't had anything else happen, thank God. And I pray a lot now. And, you know, this makes me sound a little soft, but I'll be honest with you. For about 2, maybe 3 years after that, the possession happened, I slept with the light on because I didn't even want to be in the room, especially if I was alone. In the dark, because I was freaked out. I mean, when something like that happens to you, you just, you know, I can't express how terrifying it is.
Well, first of all, I don't think that makes you sound soft or weak in any way. I mean, it's very clear and evident that between what happened with the Ouija board and your health, that you've become a lot closer to God or spirituality. But no, man, it's absolutely terrible. As I mentioned before, Sean and I are friends outside of the podcast too, and we've talked quite a bit about it. And I can't even begin to imagine how difficult physically and emotionally that would be, you know, with what you're going through. And not to mention, you know, what your grandfather's going through at the same time. It takes a lot of tough will and determination to get your way through it. I can only imagine having to go to chemo as often as you have over all those years.
Yeah, it's definitely rough. And on top of that, you know, I take care of my children, and, you know, both my boys live with me. My daughter lives with her mother about an hour away, but I still see her as much as possible and still do for them, you know, as much as I can. And, you know, just my kids are everything, and I attribute me still being here to my kids, you know, because if it wasn't for them, I know I wouldn't have made it through all this, because it's been hard. You know, there's been a lot of nights where I've thought, wow, I don't even really want to be here anymore. This is too much. But I can't just give up because of my children. You know, they're my world, you know?
Yeah. Well, they're lucky to have you. But But yeah, with the lights off, you mentioned earlier that you thought that made you, or that you thought that could be perceived as soft, but I don't think so, man. Like, you know, when I was young and at the time I was in the peak of my health and athletic, I was a pretty tough kid from the Detroit area. But yeah, when that happened to me, I slept with the lights on for probably 2 months after it, because it happened twice in less than a week, right? So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and I wasn't a spiritual person really at all. It's not that I didn't believe in God or any higher power, but I started sleeping with the Bible, you know, 2 feet from my head, either under my pillow or on my little nightstand. I even put crosses on my door and in my room, and even, you know, now knowing who it was and that it was completely malevolent, you know, when you don't have any other experiences like that, you don't really know how to perceive it, let alone, you know, react to it. But no, I can absolutely imagine that most anybody would have done the same thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, once you go through something, like, it's easy to say what you'll do in a situation if it's never happened to you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to say, oh, I would have did this or I would have did that. It's like, okay, but you know, when something like that happens to you abruptly out of nowhere, you don't know what you're going to do. You know, that's the real truth of the matter. And, you know, so it blows me away that some people actually go out of their way to leave their body. I'm sure you're familiar with astral projection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's supposedly a way that you can meditate and you can leave your body through astral projection. And I've always been curious about it, but I've never actually tried to do it, just for the fact that I was worried that if I ever did leave my body again, would it get taken over by another demon? You know, are you leaving yourself susceptible to to getting possessed? So never tried that, but I gotta tell you, I gotta emphasize on how peaceful it was when I left my body. I mean, I can't explain how peaceful it was. I had zero human emotions at all. No fear, no anger. You know, I went from panicking, like, oh my God, what's going on? I'm getting possessed, to everything. It was just okay, you know? And I remember when I was outside of my body, the only thing I was really thinking was, wow, this is like very interesting. But I wasn't upset. You know, I wasn't panicking. I wasn't freaking out or anything. And then as soon as I got back into my body, all those human emotions just started coming back, you know, panic. And then I'm fighting for control of my body. And when she left, it was such a relief. I mean, I could feel her when she left. I could feel her leave my body. And I got to tell you, and your listeners, people say play when it comes to Ouija board, like, hey, let's go play a Ouija board. Ouija board is nothing to play with. And I definitely would recommend not having one in my house. I won't let one in my house. If somebody came over with one, I'd say, no, you have to go. Like, you're not, I don't want one of those things around me. They're evil. And I don't care if they're made by Milton Bradley and they sell them at Walmart or whatever. I don't care. Those things, that's a real portal to the other side. And you never know what you're going to get, you know?
Yeah. Those things absolutely terrify me, but without having the conversations that I've had with you or even a previous guest, Nina, I think her episode was called UFOs Over Kentucky and a Haunting in Connecticut. It was really early on, but same exact thing, Sean. It was, you know, she was young. She didn't really know what could happen or even take it that serious. I mean, they're sold in stores sometimes, or at least they used to be. And they're, if not, that you can get them off Amazon with a couple of clicks, you know? So like,
yeah.
But yeah, they absolutely terrify me. And that's exactly right. I mean, they kind of open up a portal to your personal life, and really it's almost just like, I don't know if this analogy will work or not, but it's almost like, you know, with the astral traveling or projecting, I get what you mean. It seems like it's almost like an invitation, like, you know, it's like leaving your doors unlocked, front right. and back doors, and you know, leaving for a month, hypothetically. Do you know what I mean? It's just
absolutely and what I've heard is when you astral project, you are actually still tied to your body through some type of cord, like a long looking umbilical cord. I don't know if you ever heard that one, but they say that you're still connected to your body no matter how far away you go from your body. You're still connected by this long cord thing. So I don't, when I was out of my body, I don't remember anything like that. I was just floating around and, you know, just watching myself pretty much. But, you know, I used to say things when I was younger, like, I don't believe in heaven or hell or anything like that. I mean, for one, how could hell even hurt you if you're dead? You have no nerves to feel pain. Mm-hmm. So if you have no nerves to feel pain, how are you going to feel fire or, you know, whatnot? But then after that happened to me, I had to rethink things because I was like, well, wait a minute. I was outside of my body, so I didn't technically have eyes. I was a spirit, but I could still see just fine. And, you know, I started having like really crazy dreams after all that happened. I started getting a lot of lucid dreams and a lot of dreams that basically I perceive as evil, just evil dreams. Like, I'll give you an example. I would have dreams with these three cloaked, I want to call them gentlemen, but they seemed evil to me. But in my dreams, I was calling them the three mystics. Well, I don't even know where I got that word from, but I was calling them the three mystics in my dream. And they were just completely evil. And they would have me do like evil things, you know, and like I would conjure up. I would do like a set of things. I can't really explain everything I did, but I would basically do like a sequence of things that I just automatically knew intuition, and it would conjure up evil. And then after I would do it, I would just feel the most evil presence of all time. And then I'd say, why did I do that? You know, like, what am I doing? And then I would wake up and just sweat, panic, and it just felt way too real. Actually, I had a reoccurring dream since I was a child. And in this dream, I would consider it hell, like, or the closest thing to hell I can imagine. And it would just be the most off-the-wall screams. I would just hear screaming and just people screaming and yelling and just, you know, their voices would just echo and the screams would just echo. And as far as I remember, I had a gun in my dream, and I would, this sounds really crazy, I know, but I would start shooting all the people I love. And it's not that I wanted to, in my dream, they were like coming after me. And I had a gun, so I would just start shooting. And so I'm essentially killing everyone I love in my dream. And I had that reoccurring dream ever since I was maybe 8 years old. I mean, for years, I had this dream. And when I would wake up from the dream, I would feel like I was laying on a bed of nails. Like my mattress, it would feel like I was laying on like hard spikes every time I woke up from that dream. And you know, dreams in and of itself are pretty wild. You know, they're pretty trippy. And, you know, after that happened, I started having those evil dreams. And thank God that's all went away. I haven't had one in a long time. And I don't consider myself evil at all. I consider myself a good person, you know, and I try to be a good person. I'm not perfect, obviously. No one is. But, you know, I don't know why I would just conjure up evil in my dreams. And maybe it was, you know, God trying to tell me something like, hey, you know, this is what you're doing when you're playing with a Ouija board. You're conjuring up evil. You know, you're hurting your people around you. You're hurt, you know, it's not a good thing. So I'll never mess with one of those things again. That's for sure. Yeah.
No, I don't blame you. I mean, I think I can kind of relate to what you're saying, though. Like, you know, the worst bout of depression I had was lasted, God, it's hard to tell because it was, but yeah, I essentially, you know, I would eat lunch, wouldn't eat breakfast or dinner, wouldn't even come down for dinner. You know, I'd go to work, I'd eat a couple scoops of peanut butter, come home around 4 and just lay in bed until the next day. And I lost 35, 40 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And, but yeah, stuff that I would never imagine myself thinking, I was starting to think it. And although it wasn't necessarily harming other people, it was self-harm, just terrible, unbelievable things that I never thought I would think. And, you know, even though it wasn't necessarily my choice, I think I was vibrating very low. And, you know, I know some people kind of roll their eyes when you talk about vibrating high or low. But the way I see it, that just simply means thinking positively and being grateful. And sometimes you're out of control of that, of course, but I can definitely relate to what you're saying. Just thoughts that don't even seem to be yours. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I've realized a lot about intention. I don't think that it's necessarily that the Ouija board is anything special. I just think that it's your intention. So, you know, I think you could make a Ouija board with a piece of paper if you wanted to, as long as you have the intention of doing that and trying to conjure up something or trying to contact, you know, the other side or something like that, you know, then it'll work. I don't think there's anything necessarily special about the Ouija board. I just think that it's, you know, intention is huge. And the words that we speak are huge. You know, the sword can kill someone, but the tongue can harm someone's soul. And, you know, the tongue is like the most powerful weapon in the world, you know, so you have to watch what you say in this life, you know, because the negative energy you put out comes back around, and same positive too, you know.
Yeah, I got to say vague, but, you know, I surround myself with, you know, pretty positive people, or just easygoing, drama-free. And recently I was, you know, confined to a very small place for a few days with somebody who was extremely negative. And yeah, just kind of, you know, gossiped, and they had nothing good to say about anything or anybody. And it almost like seeps into you. It's hard to explain. I think I'm just so used to being around positivity and, or at the very least, like laid back people, that when you're around somebody who's highly, highly negative, it almost brings you down a little bit. Have you ever had that where you're around somebody who everything's terrible? And
I call them psychic vampires. They just suck the life out of you and just, you know, suck the life out of any room they're in. And yeah, I try to steer clear from those people. My circle has gotten a lot smaller as I've gotten older. You know, you realize everyone's not your friend. Everyone doesn't have your good intention at heart. And, you know, even people that you consider your friends now, you have to watch what you say to those people, because that could be ammunition used against you later if that ever becomes an enemy. And yeah, I've had a lot of experiences like that, so I can definitely relate. You know, you just got to try to stay around positive people. And if you notice, I don't even go to church, so I'm not, you know, like super religious or anything. But if you notice, the happiest people seem to be people that are religious and go to church. I mean, it just seems to me, when you look around, those are the happiest people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're, you know, they're doing something right. You know, at least they're happy, whether they're right or wrong or whatever. They're definitely happy people. I mean, look at the Mormon religion. I don't necessarily agree with their doctrine or whatever. But if you look at them, I mean, these people are super happy all the time.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I have no problems with religion whatsoever, as long as people aren't using their religion to hurt other people, whether it's verbally or you know, physically. But I think you're right. I think people just having it's almost like a big group therapy, really, and just having something to believe in, and kind of like a small tribe where everybody kind of is like-minded and for the most part, you know, positive.
Yeah, I agree. It's just like that community of people that are around you, and just, you know, we need that as humans. You know, we need interaction with other people. And, you know, when you're in prison and you do something wrong, what do? They isolate you. No one wants to be isolated, even in prison. You'd rather be around crazy felons than be alone in a room. I mean, no one wants to be alone, you know. Well, I guess some people might, but not me and not most people I know. You know, you need that human interaction. That's what life is all about. You know, you can have everything you want. You can have the nicest car, all the money you want, but if you have no one to share it with, you know, no family, then you don't have anything, you know. And, you know,
I think when I talk to my friends, like outside of the podcast world, instead of, you know, they're all my friends really, but you and I have such rapport, it's almost not like I'm just trying to piggyback everything you're saying. But I know exactly what you mean. There's I've not read a lot of books outside of ufology, right? So there was this one book I read not long after high school called Into the Wild. And I'm not going to break down the whole book, but he essentially kept a journal, the main character did, throughout his whole entire experience that the book was written about. But he has this one line when he's on the brink of death, and he's essentially starving to death in Alaska, right? So, but in his journal, he wrote, happiness is only real when shared. And that always rings so true to me, you know, like, you know, if you were just, I can't even imagine just living somewhere with no friends or family. Like a lot of people who move to Alaska to try to like even just do like a homestead type deal, The ones that are secluded and by themselves often end up killing themselves.
Yeah, or going crazy. I could imagine that happening. Also, you know, most people, at least in that situation, would want to keep a pet or something, you know, to, you know, just to have around, you know, because no one who wants to be alone in their head all day, every day with your own thoughts and no one to talk to, no one to convey your feelings to, no one to convey your thoughts to, you know, that sounds like hell to me, you know. And I, so I do apologize if I'm cutting out. My grandfather actually keeps calling me. And
you're fine. You sound pretty clear on my end. This is kind of a strange question. I don't often ask people, but is there anything paranormal or strange that's happened in your life that you've not really brought up before on podcast?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, those are the only handful of paranormal experiences. Now, mind you, I have seen what I thought was a UFO quite a few times. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in aliens, you know, and it's hard to get good video footage with a phone. That's when it comes to something in the sky. But, you know, I've definitely seen a lot of anomalies in the sky where I'm like, that's not a plane. That's not a helicopter. You know, that's something else altogether. And I mean, if you really look into the whole UFO thing and you don't believe it, then you're being naive, because there's, I mean, you go from the Betty and Barney Hill abduction to Travis Walton to Calvin Parker. I mean, this is all people that have witnesses. People are passing lie detector tests. You know, you got the Ariel school incident. I know you're familiar with that one in 1994, I believe. And it, you know, it was these aliens were witnessed by 100 people, you know, a bunch like 80, 90 students and, you know, a couple teachers, and they all got the same telepathic message at one time. And these people are in their 30s now and they're still swearing by this, you know. So I don't know exactly what aliens want, but I definitely believe they're here and they're watching us. They're probably studying us.
Oh, absolutely. And the case that Sean's referring to, Netflix recently put out a program called Encounters, and I think it was maybe 4 or 5 cases, really significant ones. And the one he's the Ariel School is that in Zimbabwe. They covered that and the work of John E. Mack, Harvard psychiatrist. But that's an absolutely incredible case. I would definitely put it in, you know, the top three that I've ever heard of.
Oh, if not the top. I mean, it's insane. And, you know, it actually coincidentally, it wasn't a school for African children. It was in Zimbabwe, but it was an American school. So it was for the rich kids and the American kids and stuff like that. And there's plenty of interviews online that, you know, these people are grown now and they're still swearing by it. And there's a bunch of pictures that you can look that all the children drew what they saw. And they all pretty much drew the same thing, you know. These two or three aliens with big eyes and big heads, and they gave them all a telepathic message at once, saying, "I'm pretty much, from what I remember, it was, you guys need to take better care of your planet and don't let technology get out of control." That was one of their messages, and I don't even think that's the first time that aliens have communicated with us. Are you familiar with the Arecibo message?
I don't think so.
Well, back in, I want to say 1974, I think, Carl Sagan, who I think he's like an astrophysicist or something. He's basically the Neil deGrasse Tyson of the 70s and 80s. But he sent a message out through this radio. They called it the Arecibo message through this. I can't think of the name of it, but it was called the Arecibo something or other. And they basically sent out this description of us, and you can look it up. I mean, it's pretty wild, but it basically just shows us. It shows our DNA, and it shows the machine that we used to send out the message, and it just talks about, you know, what we're made of and just different things about us. And he sent that out into space back in, I think, like the 70s, and didn't think that we would get a reply, you know, anytime soon, because you know, it takes, space is so vast that by the time it gets anywhere of significance, you know, and got back to us, it would, you know, hundreds of years would go by or whatever. But actually, through a crop circle, so I don't know how you feel about crop circles, but there was a reply. They replied, I think in like 2001, I think it was like right after 9/11. They replied in a crop circle, and they sent back the exact same Arecibo message looking thing, but in a crop circle. So it was like they were communicating back, and it basically had a couple messages in there, and it told us that they were made of everything that we're made of, except they also are made of silicon, and just said different things about them and their planet. So, I mean, you know, if you believe the Bob Lazar story and the Betty and Barney Hill and all that stuff, apparently these things are from Zeta Reticuli, which is in the Reticuli star system, like 39 light years away. And I'm sure you know this, but from, you know, for your listeners that don't know, 39 light years away is pretty far. I mean, if you're going the speed of light, which is 186,000 miles a second, it would take you 39 years to get there. So that's supposedly where these things are from. All ones, there's short ones, there's a bunch of different ones, some other ones that look like ghoulish, and they have big ears and like really long arms. And if anybody wants to look into that, there's a something called the Hopkinsville encounter. It was in Kentucky, and basically this whole family that lived, you know, on this remote area on this farm, their house got swarmed by a few aliens, and they were shooting them, and they said the bullets would just ping, just bounce off of them, and every time they would shoot them, they would hear a ping, like it would bounce off, and then the aliens would roll, like do some type of roll, and then bam, right back up, and they didn't walk, they like levitated, and they terrorized this family like all night, so they ended up shooting like 1,000 bullets. And, you know, that right there is one of the crazier stories also. You should definitely, you know, your listeners should definitely check that out. I'm pretty sure it's the Hopkinsville encounter. So yeah. In other words, basically what I was saying was there's a bunch of different types of these things.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was actually the first interview I've ever done, and it's not available. I believe it's not available on podcasts, but the very first episode, I got to interview a woman named Geraldine Sutton Stith. And she was the granddaughter of the people there. And some people refer to it as the Hopkinsville Goblin. And I don't think it does much for the credibility of the case, unfortunately, because I think when people just saw the word goblin, they just, you know, they just didn't really take it serious. But the grandmother who was there. Yeah, she just didn't know what else to call it. Like, not only had she never even heard of aliens, but she had no reference whatsoever. So in the way that she perceived it was a goblin.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, you know, you look at our planet. We have so many different life forms on this one planet. I mean, is it really that hard to imagine that there's multiple life forms on another planet? I mean, there's, you know, there's probably short ones, tall ones, you know, hairy ones. Who knows? I mean, there's just, who knows what type of animals they have? Who knows what's going on their planet? But supposedly they're from two planets, not one. They call it ZR2 and ZR3 for Zeta Reticuli 2 and Zeta Reticuli 3. And it's a binary star system. So they basically, that just means they have two suns, you know, instead of one. So they orbit around two stars. And I'm pretty sure Betty Hill was shown all this. And this was before we had the telescopes to even know that she was right. So we ended up figuring it out later as technology got better. Wow, this lady was right. You know, there is two stars there that, you know, and these planets that orbit these two stars 39 light years away. But supposedly that's where they're from. So, you know, we do have some type of idea of where they're from. And, you know, I don't know if you're too into the Bob Lazar thing, but I definitely believe that guy. I mean,
Yeah,
100%. I believe him. His story's never changed. A lot of the things that he said have came out to be true that people tried to call him a liar for, and they tried to discredit him, you know, but
most impressive. Oh, sorry, Sean.
No, you're good.
I'll just say I'll just say quickly, the one that really stands out to me is he kept talking. I mean, this is so long ago. Was it sometime in the 70s, I thought, but he kept talking about this element 115. And mm-hmm. and they just said, yeah, they just said it's nonsense. And then I can't remember exactly when it was. I want to say it was early, like somewhere in like 2001 to 2010. Mm-hmm. They released element 115 and that it's on the periodic table. And but yeah, not only that, he was always describing how the craft would move almost belly up. And mm-hmm. You can tell by the gimbal footage, that's what it does. And even most recently, what I've seen, it was, I believe, like a Cessna-type plane. And the only detail I could really remember about the passengers inside was a pilot and then some sort of model from somewhere outside. Yeah. Yeah, and then... I mean, to me, it was one of the most clear videos I've ever seen of a UFO, and it was doing exactly that, flying belly up.
Yeah, because we think of terms of, aerodynamics, but mm-hmm. their technology is so far beyond ours that they don't care about aerodynamics. They don't care about what medium they're in. They can fly just as fast through water as they do through air. Whatever they're doing is so mind-blowing, mm-hmm. and that's why, you know, I'm so interested in the alien topic as well, because... I mean, if you really look into it, this technology is, you know, through the roof. And, you know, people always say, oh, well, you know, I don't think the government wants people to know about aliens because people aren't ready for that. People will panic and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But no, I disagree. I think the government just doesn't want that level of technology to be out there like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Free energy, things along those lines.
It would change the whole world. Mm-hmm. Overnight, you know, if you ask Bob Lazar, he says that there's scientists constantly, he was one of them, that are trying to back engineer, you know, these UFOs, and they have quite a few UFOs in Area 51. And I know it all sounds crazy, but, you know, I firmly believe that it's real and these aliens are here. And just like ghosts, it's a real phenomenon that, you know, some people don't want to accept, but whether people believe it or not, you know, is irrelevant to if it's true or not, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes, because I totally understand, especially the older I get and the more I dive into this subject, which is, you know, the more you know, the more questions you have, really, you know, as years go by. But like, one thing I used to say before, I used to kind of argue with people, I don't know if I'd call it arguing, but convincing, I guess, is they'd say, well, I can't believe that unless I saw it with my own eyes. And then I'd say something like, well, have you ever seen a giant squid? And they're like, of course not. I'm like, well, just because you haven't seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, right? I mean, in 2017, yeah, all that, the gimbal, the go fast. I mean, that was essentially them telling the whole entire world that at the very least there are unidentified flying objects. With that being said, this would probably be a good way to end this, but what do you think about these new the Whistleblower Act that essentially lets people come forward as long as things are not classified anymore without meeting any sort of punishment? People like David Grush.
Yeah, a lot of people think he's crazy and he's just making stuff up, but I don't see why anyone, I mean, if he's making stuff up, then so is David Fravor, and so is, mm-hmm. you know, that other pilot. This is multiple pilots are coming out and saying, hey, this happened, you know, we all seen it, we even have it on film or on the, you know, whatever their recorded it. Yeah, their radar camera, whatever it's called. But what, everyone's lying, you know? And it's just like, no, this is definitely people that are trying to do good, and in his mind, I'm sure he's thinking, I think the world deserves to know about this. Mm-hmm. But like I said, you have to be careful, you know, telling the whole world about technology like that, because could you imagine if technology like that got in the hands of some nut job like Kim Jong-un?
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, what would stop him from whizzing over here at 100,000 miles an hour, however fast some things go, and dropping a nuclear bomb on us? You know, I mean, there's no way you could stop a UFO if it was strapped with nuclear weapons.
You know? Yeah, that's it would actually make sense on the secrecy. I'm having a tongue tie moment here. But what I'm trying to say is the reason that, you know, the U.S. or Russia or Germany, whoever it may be, the reason that they're not willing to discuss with the public or admit to what they have is because the way that the military probably looks at it, no matter which military it is that it would be a humongous advantage if they could, you know, reverse engineer these crafts so they could possess the type of technologies just the craft itself has.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, I think that's the main reason why the government doesn't want it to get out there. They could care less what the people think, you know, if the people panic over that's all hogwash. I think that it's about the technology. They don't want that technology getting out there. And I totally agree with that. But no, as far as David Grush and all that stuff goes, I completely support him. And you know, I think he means well, you know, but, you know, you just got to watch who you give information to. You know, once you give it to the whole world, then the whole world has potential access to that technology. Mm. But I'm sure most governments know that it's a real phenomenon. You know, they just don't tell their people.
Oh, I'm sure. And but yeah, I've talked to just about as many people who decide to come on or go public as I do for the ones who don't want to. And there's been quite a few, you know, not hundreds, but quite a few former military, even active military, who don't want to come forward. And of course, I would never ask them to if they've ever expressed that they don't want to. But if there's anybody listening who would ever like to come on under an alias, you know, we've done that before in the past, just to learn more. We'd be happy to have you. And but yeah, I think we'll put a button on it. Sean, I really appreciate your time. I think your story, specifically the possession, is wildly fascinating to me. And we've not really had that on the show. And, you know, we're constantly trying to learn more about the subject. And I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate your friendship.
Well, vice versa. I appreciate you. I appreciate you having me. I love the show, and I'll continue to be a listener, whether you're my friend or not, because I love it. I love your show, and you're definitely going places, Jake. That's for sure.
Thanks, man. It was really good catching up, and I'll reach out to you as soon as we hit stop.
All right, sir. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
All right. Bye.